that they may come, that they may hear the gospel, and certainly for a time of fellowship as well. I mentioned to some of you this morning, I had a big flare-up last week of sciatica and was in bad shape, but I made a scientific discovery this afternoon. This morning I was in pain. It was hurting. But I have discovered that corn casserole, squash casserole, roast, and pumpkin roll will just about cure anything. That was a great lunch. Thank you so much. The fellowship, the sharing of ideas about food and so forth as we ate, that was wonderful. I have a tub of goodies in my room. The room is excellent. I may be here for a while. Hope y'all don't want to run me off, but I may be here for a while. If you'll be turning to the book of Numbers, we're going to kind of overview chapter 13, then we'll spend our time in just a few moments in chapter 14. This morning in Bible class, we talked about the hymn, Blessed Assurance. And we went through the phrases of that hymn, and we concluded with the idea portrayed in the chorus. This is my story. And we're going to spend this week talking about our story. This morning in our worship hour, we asked the question, what is your story? We all have one physically, but our focus this morning, I hope, was upon our story spiritually. Tonight, we're going to talk about how to write a bad story. Keep in mind, you have the pen. It's your story, not mine. It's your story, not your spouse. That you have the responsibility each and every day. And good, bad, indifferent, you're writing that story. So tonight, we're going to take Numbers 13, part of that, and Numbers 14, and we're going to talk about how do you write a bad story. Nobody wants a bad story. Let's use a couple of pictures maybe to illustrate a bad story. As we look back at history, the Civil War, where over 620,000 Americans died in battle won toward each other. And yes, it's a pivotal part in history, and yes, it played an important part in the things that followed politically. However, when I look back, that's a bad story. It's somewhat sad to even think about. What about this picture? Is that a bad story? You know exactly where you were September 11th, 2001. You know exactly the effect it had on you then, and probably to a degree each year after that as we look back and celebrate. And that was a bad story. We think of the lives. We think of the damage. We think of the intent of those who did that. That's a bad story. Is that a bad story? For people to make mistakes in their life and end up incarcerated for a period of time, short or long, or maybe even a lifelong period of time, irregardless of who they are and irregardless perhaps of what they did. When we think about individuals, men and women, I had a student one time who was not doing anything in school. He was a senior. He wasn't going to graduate. He wasn't doing anything. We were all trying to push and help. And one day, one of his teachers, his biology teacher, came in and said, "Listen, I've about had enough of Jamie." I said, "You let me take care of Jamie." "Well, you need to take..." I said, ho. "Principal's on my desk, not yours. You came to me, I'll take care of Jamie." And that teacher was a very good teacher, very seasoned teacher. He slammed his hand on my desk and said, "I want something done now." I said, "Shut the door." I said, "Have you called his dad?" "No." I said, "You can't, because he's doing life in Mecklenburg." "Have you called his mom?" "No." I said, "She's doing 30 years in St. Albans Women's Prison in West Virginia." "What do you want me to do?" I said, "Hush and help Jamie." Anytime there is something that violates the law of the land that ends up a person being incarcerated, that's a bad story. You know, there are a lot of bad stories we could depict with pictures. What about this one? Is that a bad story? That on the day of judgment, Matthew 25, he'll separate them one from another as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goats. The goats on the left hand, sheep on the right hand. Stop and think about that for just a moment. As we did this morning, what's your story spiritually? What we're going to do this evening is write a bad spiritual story. If you're in the book of Numbers for just a moment, let's look at chapter 13. It says in verse 1, the Lord told Moses to send men that they may search out the land of Canaan. It's the land that I'm going to give to the children of Israel, I'm in two, and every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, and every one a ruler among them. And we have listed, beginning at verse 4, down through verse 16, those who were sent to spy out the land. Notice it says in 3, Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran, all those were heads of the children of Israel. Skip down to 18. I want you to go, Moses said, and I want you to see what the land is. And I want you to see the people that dwell therein. I want you to see if they're strong or if they're weak, if there's many of them or if there's few of them. I want you, 19, to see whether the land is good or bad. I want you to see what they dwell. Do they live in tents? Do they live in cities? Do they have strongholds? I want you to see if the land is fat or if the land is lean. Find out if there's wood therein or not. Be ye of good courage. Bring the fruit of the land. And now was the time of the first ripe grapes. We look in 21, 22, 23, 24. The route that they took was the route that was instructed. To introduce our lesson this evening, let's look at 25. They returned from searching the land after 40 days. 10 of the spies gave a very unfavorable negative report. Notice, they brought back the word unto them in 26 to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land, and they told them and said, we came into the land where you sent us, and it surely did flow with milk and honey. We're going to stop right there for just a moment because we're getting ready to start writing a bad story based upon the report of the 10 spies. You know the report of Joshua and Caleb, and we'll mention that. But for a few minutes this evening, let's point on four things that are the basis for a bad story in Numbers into 13 and 14. And what you're going to find out, I hope, is this. That's the same basis for a bad story today. It's the same basis for children of God who decide for whatever reason to become unfaithful and indifferent toward God. It's the same basis for those individuals, for whatever reason, who make the decision in their life that they're not going to be obedient to God. Let's begin our lesson by simply talking about 28 through 33. If you want to write a bad story, forget about God and focus on the enemy. Look at beginning in 28. 27, it was with milk and honey and the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people are strong that dwell in the land. The cities are walled and they're very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites are there. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, and the mountain of the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. Caleb steeled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are all able to overcome. But the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go against the people. They are stronger than we are. They brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched until the children of Israel. Here was the report. The land through which we have gone to search it, it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. You know, this evening, if I'm going to write a bad story of my life, here's a great way to start. Forget God and focus on the enemy. Sometimes we look at the approach this way. Well, it's according how big the enemy is. And you know what is somewhat seductive about that is, quite often the enemy is very small and very insignificant, and so because of what we visualize, what we know, we overlook that enemy. But boy, if we see something big, if we see something popular, if we see something that the majority is turning to, if we start to see those things, along with that, we read about the righteous, we read about people falling away, we read about people who won't stand up and speak against, and all of a sudden our focus of life has forgotten God. And we focus on the enemy. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, we ought to be sober. We ought to be vigilant. We need to understand that our adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. We need to understand Ephesians chapter 6. Put on the whole armor of God that we might be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. I think we certainly do need to recognize who the enemy is. And I think we certainly need to recognize the wiles of the devil. The way he does wonder. The way he does work. The success he does have. And we see that every day in our society. But we should never turn our focus away from God and toward the enemy. What did the 10 say? Yes, it's just like you said it was, but there are giants there. And there are stable, strong walls there. We're scared. And within the report of the 10, now if you go back to Joshua and Caleb, particularly Caleb and 30, let us go up at once. We're able to overcome it. His focus was upon God and not upon the enemy. But then we get to the 10. Their focus is upon the enemy and they forget God. Quick question for you and I this evening. What if I start to forget verses like Romans 1:16? I'm not ashamed of the power of God. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation. To everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. 17, for therein is the righteousness of God revealed. For just a moment, let's forget that verse. Let's just claim that it doesn't exist. Let's forget, don't magnify, minimize, the fact that the gospel of Christ is the power of God unto salvation for every man, Jew, Greek, Gentile, black, white, rich, poor, male, or female. And if I open that gospel, if I open inspiration, then I find where the righteousness of God is revealed. I find my responsibility to it. The just shall live by faith. I find my responsibility to it to be obeyed. This morning we mentioned Romans 8, 28 and 31. All things work together for good to them that love God. 31, if God be for us, who could be against us? Philippians 4, 13, I can do all things through Christ. And on the list to go. To make our first point in our lesson, let's stop and think. What if I forget those verses? What if I forget God? And all of a sudden I start focusing on the enemy. In 1 John 2 and verse 15, we're not to love the world. The things in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Those things are of the world. They are not of God. So all of a sudden, for whatever reason, I decide my focus is going to turn from God. And now I'm going to focus on the enemy. Do we need to be aware of the enemy? Absolutely. Do we need to have some knowledge about him and his evil influence? Absolutely. Do we need to understand, in essence, what the definition of enemy and opposition is? Absolutely. That ought to magnify our focus upon God. Now take this first point. We're writing a bad story. Remember that? Forget God and focus on the enemy. Boy, that'd make a great opening paragraph, would it not? If I'm writing my story of my spiritual life, and I'm writing a bad one, here's a great line. Here's a great catch line. I am going to forget God, and I am going to focus upon that is evil, wrong, and the enemy. Maybe a question that's not on the screen. Why would you do that? Matthew 7 says it's easier. There's a lot of temporary pleasure, perhaps, of the fact of sin. It's not as disciplined. It's more wide open. And you say, well, that's not right. But if I forget God, then that's the focus of my life, and I'm writing a bad story. Let's go to point number two. If you want to write a bad story, start fearing men instead of God. I'm not talking about respect. We need to have respect for the authority of those who have the rule over us. Congregations and their respect toward those men who lead them as shepherds and elders. The respect we have one for another. We're talking about a sense of fear. Go to chapter 14. We're still in the book of Numbers. And look at verse number 1. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried. And the people wept that night. Now you may say, well, Keith, there's nothing wrong with crying. Why did they cry? Because of the evil report. What they had just heard. Go back for just a moment to 28. Nevertheless, the people are strong in the land. The cities are walled. We saw the children of Anak there. We saw Amalekites, Hittites, and it goes through the list. 31. The people went up against him. We're not able to go up. They are stronger than we are. The evil report was brought in 22. We saw the giants, the sons of Anak. We're like grasshoppers, 14:1. And they cried. How severe was it? The Bible says they wept that night. I understand Jesus wept. We read of tears throughout the Bible. But think about the reasoning behind this weeping. Was it fear? Was it scared? Was it being a coward? Was it the title of the slide? All of a sudden now they're worried about giants. They're worried about walled cities. They're worried about, in contrast to what Caleb said, let us go up at once and possess the land, for we are able to overcome it. They have slid that aside. The grasshopper mentality. Yesterday, I was at a Hall of Fame banquet at a local high school back home, and the guy who's in charge of the committee was making the opening comments, and a spider came down from the ceiling right in front of me. He said, well, there's the spider. Three or four people on the front row got up, moved, screamed, and I thought, you're a long way from it. What does fear do? You know, sometimes fear causes us to do things that are not correct. Sometimes fear causes us to withdraw. Sometimes fear causes us to worry. Well, what about if I start fearing men instead of God? here's a couple of things that happen. And you could give example of places and people to whom they've happened. What about when people begin to fear, have a greater concern about the thoughts of family, the traditions of family, their ancestors, and what they were spiritually and religiously? They think more of that, they focus upon that, they fear them instead of God. What about friends? 1 Corinthians 15, evil association, corrupt good manners, verse 33. Do you know of anyone who just let, they just let, allowed their friends to turn them away? And when you got so far, it was an easy turn. Why? Because their fear went from God to man. What about co-workers? What about denominational teaching? Has that ever occurred where people turned from God? No longer feared God? Fear God, keep His commandments. That's the whole duty of man, Ecclesiastes 12 and 13. But they turned from that, and for whatever reason, maybe the influence was all it was. Maybe the search for what friends were doing. You know, in the book of Luke, in chapter 12, 4 and 5, Jesus said, we're not to fear those who can kill the body, but fear those who can kill both soul and body in hell. We're writing a story. We've already got a great opening paragraph. Think about this for just a moment. After I've written that opening paragraph, part of my life becomes this. I love the praise of men more than the praise of God. I forgot God because I'm worried about the enemy. First slide. And now we magnify that up. Not only have I forgot Him, but my fear, my respect, my concern, my focus has gone to men instead of God. Here's where we're at. Our bad story's getting worse. When I start to think more of the enemy than I do of God, when I start to fear men instead of God, this is getting to be a bad story. Let's go back to the book of Numbers for just a moment. When I start to forget what God has done, look at Numbers chapter 14. The children of Israel in 2 were murmuring against Moses and Aaron. We'd rather die in Egypt. 3. Wherefore hath God brought us to this land, to fall by the sword? Our wives and our children should be prey. It were not better for us to return to Egypt. Now 4. And they said one to another, let us make a captain, and let us return unto Egypt. Now think about the setting here for just a moment. Who's talking? The land that was spied out. The report of Joshua and Caleb, let us go. The report of the 10, we're scared, they're giants. They have walled cities, they have a lot of strength, they're very intimidating. We can't go. They started writing their bad story. Now we're on 3. And notice the people said to each other, let us make a captain and let us return unto Egypt. Now within the text for just a moment, and you know it better than I, what had God done for these people who are murmuring and complaining? You know bondage, deliverance from that bondage. We begin to understand the provisions that God made concerning food and water, His providence in guiding them, the promise of the land in and of itself. But you know, when you start looking at the enemy instead of looking at God, when you start to fear men instead of fearing God, then it just follows suit. What is happening is you have forgotten what God has done. in the magnitude of our salvation today aside for just a moment. Think about the people in the text. Think about the people in the text physically. It was bondage. And now, because of their first two slides, if you will, they have come to the fact, yes, it's Egypt. Yes, were we in bondage. Yes, that's from whence He delivered. Yes, He provided for us, but you know we'd be better off. I read a bulletin article a long, long time ago. Can't remember who wrote it. And it was entitled, don't remember much about the article, come to think of it, but I remember the title. What if we just up and quit? What if we just said, you know, look at that enemy, the world. Look at the immorality. Look at the political wickedness. Look at. Let's just quit. What a bad story. What about you and I today? What has God done for us? Jesus prayed in the garden, sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. The access to God's word that we have. The brethren among us with whom we serve. The hope that we have. As we studied this morning in the 10 o'clock hour, the blessed assurance that we have. Let's illustrate this one maybe a little bit more clearly. For just a moment, let's forget John 3:16. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. That's God's part. That whosoever believeth in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. That's man's part. For just a moment, let's just forget that. I don't know if they still make white out or not, but let's just wipe that one out. What has happened? I have forgotten the greatest giver who gave the greatest gift for me while I was in sin. Look at Romans 5 and verse 8. While we were in sin, He commended. He didn't have to. He commended His love toward us. We understand if I transgress God's law, 1 John 3 and verse 4, I commit sin. If I omit God's law, James chapter 4 and verse 17, the sin of omission. I've committed sin. What does sin do? It separates a man from God. How was man going to get back to God? While we were in sin, He commended His love toward us. Let's wipe that one out. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8 and 9. Verses that are so powerful, but you got to use them properly. For by grace are you saved through faith, that not of yourselves. It is a gift of God. Not of works, lest any man should boast. For just a moment this evening, let's just X that one out. We mentioned John 14 and verse 1 this morning. Let not your heart be troubled. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go and prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you unto myself. That where I am, there you... Let's just mark that one out. We had an opening paragraph. We started fearing men instead of fearing God. This story's getting worse. And now what has happened? God is leaving your story. And you caused it. If God be for us, who decides whether or not God is in my life? Who decides whether or not God is in my home? Who decides whether or not God guides me each and every day that I live as a husband, as a wife, as a member of the local community? Who decides that? I do. In Matthew 7, enter ye in. Now, I have that responsibility. I have that choice. It is upon me. And now we've to the fact we're focusing on the enemy and we're forgetting God. We have more fear for men than we do for God. And now it's slipping our mind. as to what God has done. Let's continue writing. When I start to ignore, to just shun away from, to become careless in the responsibilities I have to obey, my bad story just got worse, and it's just about completed. We're still in the book of Numbers. Look at verse number 6 of chapter 14. Joshua, the son of Nun, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they told the company of Israel, "The land that we passed through to search it is an exceeding good land." What did he say? It's the promised land. Who promised it? God. Who did he promise it to? You. Keep on reading at 8. If the Lord delight in us, then he'll bring us unto this land. He'll give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. That's a very powerful statement. If the Lord delight in us. If we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. And the blood of Jesus Christ, his Son, cleanseth us from all sin. A condition, if we walk there. Notice the condition here. If by our lives and by our obedience and by our focus upon God, our points this evening, if I remember God and shun the world, if I continue to fear God and no longer fear men, and now we're to this activity obedience, if the Lord delight in us, then he'll bring us to this land. Keep on reading in 9. Only rebel not ye against the Lord. Don't fear the people of the land. They are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them. And the Lord is with us. Fear them not. 7 and 8, he said, remember the promised land. In verse 9, what did he say? God is with you. But remember on the last slide, we took God out. And now we start to simply ignore. It doesn't really matter. You know, we mentioned this morning, and we could use it here in Numbers chapter 14. These people didn't get it. And there are a lot of people today who don't get it. When I remove God, when I start to fear men more than God, when I focus upon the enemy and not upon God, I'm not getting the purpose of it all. Because what does it lead to? How does this story, the main part, go? They started to ignore the blessings that come with obedience. Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will. Conditional. Revelation 14, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord. Henceforth they'll rest from their labors, and their works do follow. Conditional. John 14, 15. If you love me, then keep my commandments. But for our story tonight, we've pushed him aside. He's not the central character as we close this morning. He's not the focus of all that we do. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 1 and verse 3, all spiritual blessings are where? They're in Christ. But we're ignoring those blessings because of our disobedience and our bad story. Revelation 2 and verse 10, we just mentioned. Revelation 14 and 13, we just mentioned. What are those saying? Obedience. He's God. He's the creator, and we are the creature. We've written a bad story. Have you ever thought about how a bad story turns out? You know, if you go to the bookstore and you want a thriller, or you want some spy mystery, or maybe you want to read about the life of someone their biography, autobiography maybe, and you know that you went searching for it because it was a pivotal time maybe in history in the life of someone, you know it's not a good story. Well, tonight we wrote a bad spiritual story from Numbers chapter 13 and 14. It's the day of judgment. Before him shall be gathered all nations. He'll separate them. He'll say to those on his right hand, "Come, ye blessed of my Father. Inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. I was hungry, and you fed me, thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was sick and in prison, and you visited me. Lord, when did we see you? When you did it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me." That's a good story. Man, that's good. What were they doing? Exactly what they were supposed to be doing. And then we go to verse 41. He'll say to those on the left hand, "Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. I was hungry, you didn't feed me. I was thirsty, you gave me no drink. I was sick and in prison, you visited me not. When did we see thee in these conditions? When you failed to do it on one of least of these, my brethren." 46, the last verse. "And these shall go away into everlasting punishment." That's a bad story. There are a lot of people this evening that you and I know that are writing a bad story. And thanks be to God, there are people like you this evening who are making every attempt to write a good story. This morning, Bible class, this is my story. This is my song. At 11 o'clock, what is your story? And then tonight, we illustrated from Numbers how you write a bad one. So we'll close as we close this morning. Your story, not mine. Your story. I have to look at my story. Is it good or bad? You know, it's interesting to me, and sometimes I tell Connor this as he was growing up. I say, you know, sometimes you've got to understand the negative so you can understand the positive. Tomorrow night, Lord's will, we're going to talk about how you write a good story. We gave some tips this morning, but we'll get into a little more detail tomorrow night. How do you write a good one? You know, if you gave me a topic to write a story about in school, and it was something I was interested in, something I'd spent time in, something that kind of was the motivation, man, I could write, because I liked what we were writing about. But you give me a topic. Connor the other day was writing a paper in reflecting on a poem from British literature. And I thought, how boring is that? How do you get excited about that? This won't surprise you. In the lives of many people, writing a bad story is easy because of the choice that they've made. And sometimes the effort and discipline required to write a good story is the reason why they're writing a bad story. And maybe we would even find those, sadly enough, within the church who would look and would begin to realize, you know, my story's not too good. Maybe not to the degree of Numbers 13 and 14, but to the degree that I'm not what I should be in my relationship with God. We mentioned this morning, it's your pencil. It's your paper. And tonight, hopefully, now we understand one great example of how you write a bad story. Maybe this evening, as we close our time together, it could be simply said, maybe there are those here, self-included, who need to, we need to change our story. Maybe not to the degree of forgetting God. Maybe not to the degree of disobedience because we forgot and focused upon, maybe not to that degree, but maybe there's a drift in that direction. maybe there's an excuse for the drift in that direction. I'll stand before God with my story. This evening, if there's a manner or a way in which you need to respond to the invitation of Christ, we'll give you that opportunity now as together we stand and sing.